You're listening to Good on Paper, a bookish podcast. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Rachel.
Join us as we journey together into the land of fiction, where the men are brave, the quests are epic, and everything is better on paper. Hi, everybody. Happy 4th of July week. We recorded this on 4th of July, but obviously it's a couple days later for you guys. But hello.
Hello, everybody.
Hi there.
So today we have a very special guest. We have Victoria Dixon. You might know her as VK Dixon, which is the name she publishes under. And she is a fantasy and romance author. She's published two books. One is called Lake of Glass, and the other is a serial story called Fire and Night. So, welcome, Victoria. What do I say after this? Do you want to tell us a little about yourself? I know I gave away like the most important part about your books, but you know, if you have something else you want to say to introduce yourself.
So I've been writing since I was 7 years old. I remember distinctly being on a road trip with my family and asking my mom if she had a piece of paper because I had a story idea and I wanted to start writing it down. And it was some ridiculous, like, high school story. And I was homeschooled, so I'd never been in a school, but I was like, I want to write about these teenagers at 7 years old. And I just remember that moment as like, that was the first time that I ever like intentionally wrote anything. And then I decided around the age of 14, I just kind of dabbled with writing every now and then. And then when I was 14 was when I was like, this is what I want to do. This is who I am. So I've been writing for 23 years now. And so I always kind of knew that's what I wanted to do. But just throughout time, I never quite had a book that I felt ready to publish or anything like that. And then when I turned 29, my husband was like, what do you want to do in your 20s? Like, this is your final year as being 20. What do you want to do? And I was like, I want to have a book published before I turn 30. And so that was the big push for me with writing Lake of Glass and then publishing it in 2022, was just having that done before I was 30. And I was very, very thankful that I was actually able to do that. So that's kind of my writing genesis.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. I didn't know you kind of set that goal so soon before publication. And Lake of Glass is like, I mean, you know, I love that book so much. I mean, it's, you didn't rush it at all.
Thank you.
That's really impressive.
I appreciate it. Yeah. It was kind of a fast turnaround because I had the idea for Lake of Glass in November of, I guess it was 2021, I had the idea and I was like, oh, I think this could be a good first book. And then I just decided, well, you know what, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to run with it. And so then a year later, I had it out in the world, which is kind of odd. It was really fast.
Well, you and Rachel, I feel like, have a lot in common in that regard, because you are both queens of the fast turnaround and writing like a million words in a day. And I know one of our questions from your fans wanted to know, Bryn wanted to know how you write so many words in a day.
That is an excellent question. I always, honestly, I just chalk it up to personality in a lot of ways, because for me, I'm just a huge binger, like, of everything. I binge watch TV. I binge read. I just, like, if I find an album that I love, I just listen to that, like, almost exclusively for, like, months at a time. And I think that's just tends to be my personality, where I just tend to, like, if I want to do it, I just sit down and I do it. And I kind of forget that the world exists and sort of just sit there. And so I think that's really what it comes down to for me, because I don't know. I don't know otherwise.
The obsessive personalities. Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, there's definitely cons of having that kind of personality, but there's definitely a lot of pros So yeah. I don't know, Rachel, is that like kind of similar to how you are?
Yeah, I was going to say that reminds me of like when, you know, somebody brings home groceries. I don't go out and grab two bags. I grab as many bags as I can physically carry at one time. Same. And like when I go to eat something I'm really excited about, I have no self-control and I eat all of it. So it's like when I'm writing, it's the same thing. I'm like, well, I could just do the 2,000 or I could write for an hour longer and get 4,000 done. Like, you know, it's just like you can't like stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me,
obsessive sounds right.
I don't know. I don't know. A lot of people tend to write in scenes and I've never done that. I've always written in chapters. And so for me, it's like, oh, let me just finish this chapter. I don't want to stop. It's just like reading a book. I don't want to stop in the middle of a chapter. I want to finish the chapter. So for me, that's typically somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 words. So to write less than that in a day just feels off for me because I'm like, oh, I left it unfinished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's me, and I generally don't even finish a scene in one writing session. I'm like, I'll come back to this later because I tend to write maybe 500, 1,000 words at a time. And sometimes I'll do like several sessions during a day and I get like more words, but like, you know, I just, which makes me kind of crazy because I feel like I really should sit down and focus more instead of doing like tiny little tasks and here and there because I feel like I'm going crazy half the time, but that's how it is.
Everybody's different.
Yeah. I feel like more people are that way though, where they just kind of, they almost can't engage for those long periods of times. It's like they need that break to step back and then get back into the writing because it's almost like too much to be in the world that long. So I feel like there are a lot of writers that are out there that tend to be more that 500 to 1,000 words in a day or in a session. And I think there is something to that, that it like, it is beneficial for sure. I get really caught up in the world and forget what I'm even trying to do in the middle of a chapter.
Well, your world building is just so vivid. Mm-hmm. Like I completely understand how that would happen. Cause like when I was reading Lake of Glass and I've read a few chapters of Fire and Night, although now I've decided I think I'm going to wait for it all to be out so I can just binge.
I don't blame you.
But yeah, I just feel like I'm there, you know, in your world. So, and I think, was that a question too? Yes. So Ashley, another one of your fans, wants to know what inspired your book universe. You have so many book plans and it's so impressive. And I mean, I know that you do a lot of heavy world building before like you even start. So yeah, I'm just curious about that. And so is Ashley, and I'm sure other people are as well too.
Yeah. So it's a funny thing. I always consider myself to be kind of a supernova sort of person where I start off with this one small idea and then it turns into this massive idea and it just goes crazy and I can't really stop it from happening. Because originally when I was writing Archives of the Warden, when I was starting the series, it was just going to be a series about Peter and Spencer. And it was just going to be about them solving mysteries in this small town in Washington. And it was going to have the like supernatural paranormal kind of vibes going on. But it was just going to be that. And I was like, that's all it needs to be. That I'm just going to keep it small. They're going to be like little, almost like I was intending it to be like a standalone series where it was like each book could be released where you could read them in any order, but it would make more sense if you read them in the same order. And then as I got more and more into the planning of it, I realized that the world that I was building actually fit really well with some of these other story ideas that I had already had years ago. And at that point I was like, oh, well, I could just kind of pull them all in together and then they could just be within the same world. And then I started finding all these ways that I could tie them in and all that different stuff. And so it kind of just grew into this really big universe. And that's when I discovered it was going to be like a 14 book series. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this is what we're doing now. But that just tends to be how it goes with my writing process, is I always have this one like really nice, quaint, small idea that's supposed to just be this tiny thing. And then it always turns into something way more massive.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So do you, which part do you like more then? Or which part is easier, the world building or when it comes to actually writing it?
You know, I think it depends on the story. Mm-hmm. Because for Archives of the Warden, it's a contemporary. So there's not as much world building involved in some aspects. But then I created an entire three towns. So that created kind of its own world building aspects, I guess. I mean, it is kind of a different, it depends on the story, because then like Warriors and Mages, which is what Fire and Night is part of, that one is a totally different world. So it's, I built it from the ground up, sort of. And I definitely enjoy that aspect of the process. I love the world building. It's character building that I get most excited about with the world building aspect. So that tends to be the thing I like the most. And then, man, I don't know. It's like, I feel like they fight all the time, where I'm like, some days I would totally choose drafting over anything else. And then other days I'm like, just let me world build.
I agree. I feel like whatever one I'm working on is the one that I'm most excited about, because you're just like so in it at the time.
Yeah. I definitely think that that's similar, because right now I'm drafting the second book in the Port Haven subseries of Archives of the Warden. So it's actually going to be book six, but it's the second one that takes place in this specific town. And I'm really loving it. And I'm really loving the drafting process of it, even though I honestly probably need to be doing some more world building work just to prepare well.
Yeah,
I definitely am in the same boat as you, because I started drafting, but I know that I should really probably like plot out, you know, the map of the town and everything, because it's historical, but it's fantasy. So I'm like, I don't know. And it's based on a real town. So I'm like, I don't know how like much research and how accurate I want to make it, or if I just want to make up my own town. But either way, I think I need to have like a better idea of the town, because I'm writing, I'm like, they walked blank miles, you know, I don't fill in the details.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could always leave it until later, because sometimes I feel like if I do too much development, I feel like I let it determine the plot, which doesn't always work.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, maybe if I do some world building afterwards, it can like fit into the plot.
Yeah.
Just because plot is a weakness for me. Like some people, like, I think you even mentioned, Victoria, that your world building informs the plot,
which it really
worked
does
really well for you, because like your plot was good, but my plot tends to be like kind of boring. Like I just am not very good at plot, so I have to be careful not to, you know. But yeah
it definitely, world building definitely does help determine a lot of my plot lines, because it is, honestly, I feel like my stories tend to be so relationship centric. I kind of have started considering it to be relationship driven plot lines versus character driven, even, because it's not just about like one character over the other. It's about the relationships, the interpersonal conflicts, and just relationships in general that are going on in between all the different characters. That's really what's driving the story forward. That's really what I enjoy writing. It's what I like reading. I don't care about the extraneous like world building and things like that. Just get me to the scenes where they're talking to each other. So that tends to be what I prefer. And so I've kind of come to this conclusion that like that's what I am. I'm a relationship writer. So I struggle with the plot line development of like, okay, but it's great that you want to have them have this conversation. It's great that you want this relationship to be happening. Friend, family, romance, whatever kind of relationship is going on. Like, I always focus on that. And then I miss these like key elements of, okay, but they're trying to solve a mystery here. How are they going about this investigation? Because that tends to be difficult for me. So the world building can really help fill that in for me, where I tend to lose like what I'm even trying to say within the story. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the biggest way it helps inform it for me.
I totally identify with that because I'm the same way where like when I was going through revising process, when it was a relationship centric scene, oh, I could revise that in my sleep. That was so much fun. But it, when it was plot driven, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. Like it wasn't as natural because I had to really think about how to make the plot work. And then I was like, well, wait a second, this has to tie to that and all that kind of stuff. So I totally get that. And I think I did like a first draft with kind of bare bones world building, and then for the second draft went in and world built like really extensively, and you're right, it really helped inform the plot. Like all the things that were kind of missing, I could pull from that world building and be like, oh, this can fit in that like empty space of the plot here and there, and like so I totally get that.
I think that's honestly something that I've come to the conclusion of for myself is I love doing a first draft and then coming back and going like, hey, wait a minute, I completely missed this aspect over here in the world. That's fine, because it's just the first draft. You're going to revise it anyways. And so, yeah, I'm revising the second book in the Warriors and Mages trilogy right now. And the book starts with a bunch of action sequences. And I don't like writing them. I've come to this ever. Because it's just like, he went here and she did this and they said that, and then they went and did this, and then this thing crashed into the room, and it just feels very repetitive and very slow. And so I'm like, but I just want them to talk to each other. Can we just get to the relationship, please? But it's very needed. And so I think that that kind of stuff is like, something I try to remind myself is that's the stuff that you can really fill out and perfect in revisions, where you don't have to worry quite as much about it when you're first drafting it.
100%. Yeah, the skeleton drops. I'm the same with action sequences too.
They're so frustrating.
They are. I have to clean them up so much in revisions, it's not funny.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like you just like continually are repeating the same word of like, punch, hit, swing. Yeah. It's just like, that's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. What about you, Jenny?
With action scenes, I never plan them. So when they come out, it's generally like a spur of the moment inspiration kind of a thing. Because I don't like action scenes, so I never plan on writing them, but sometimes randomly they will happen. And then I feel like they're not so bad because, like, I don't know that I'm going to be writing one. So, like, I don't build up, like, the anxiety about it. So it generally, like, comes pretty well, but I don't have a lot of them. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if I wrote books with more heavy action scenes, like, I would struggle more, but because they're so infrequent in my books, yeah, they're generally okay because they just kind of come out when I'm not like expecting them to. But yeah, my books are generally a lot more like the girl stays home and, you know, does this stuff, and then she sees this guy, and that's my books. It really that's it nice is. Yeah, though. She stays home and then she sees this guy and something.
I feel like that's like the cozy fantasy genre. And I was just recently introduced to that, and I'm like starting to be very intrigued by it because I feel like Fire and Night is sort of on that fringe of cozy fantasy where it's much more relationship centric. And there's a whole chunk of the story that is not very action focused, that does come later, but it is like, it's primarily a focus of that relationship. And I think that's what's really interesting about cozy fantasy. It is focused primarily on the relationship aspect of things. Mm-hmm. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. It's my favorite genre. I mean, and I guess most of what I write is more cozy, although I do have like the one book with the wolves and the Anglo-Saxons, that one turned out to be a lot more battle heavy than usual. You just can't. I mean, it was a violent time and we have werewolves. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it can't not get into that realm, but like everything else is very just, like you said, cozy fantasy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's nice. That's really cool. But so I think we had, let's see, we had another question from Drew. And Drew wants to know when you're going to visit Alaska again.
I don't know. I want to visit today because it's really hot here right now. So for those who don't know, last June, at the end of June, my husband and I went and we stayed with some of our best friends in Alaska for the summer. So we were there from the end of June through the beginning of September. I think it was like September 1st we came back or something like that. So that was really, really lovely. We don't get to see them very often because they're all the way in Alaska. So it was really great to go spend that time with them. And we just, we spent pretty much the whole time up there. I was working on getting Lake of Glass ready to publish. And we were both just kind of, it was more of like a work vacation for us where we just went up there. And that was kind of our time to really establish, like make some decisions. We wanted to spend the time like really talking with God and saying, okay, where do you want us to go with our careers and our lives over the next however many years? Like, what do you want us to do? Because I've always known that I wanted to be a writer, but actually making that happen as a full-time career is not as easy as you hope it would be. We took that time to go up there and do that. And so we've been back for a year now, almost a year now. And I would love to go back anytime, but we don't have any immediate plans to return right now. It's a big trip to do. But we would love to go back. Hopefully maybe we can go next year. Because we both really love it up there. That was our second time visiting. It's gorgeous up there. I don't know is the official answer, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, it's
a long
nice
trip to
meet.
Take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. But I always tell people, if you can go to Alaska, if you can ever visit, do it. It's just, it's such a gorgeous, wonderful place.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's so nice that you got to meet Drew in person. And we actually just had her on.
Yeah,
not last week, but the week before. So we're just getting all the people who've been to Alaska or live in Alaska, I guess.
It's Yeah. It was kind of crazy because I wound up meeting several people while I was up in Alaska. And now I feel like some of the writers that I know the best on Instagram are like Alaskan. And I'm like, why are you guys so far away?
I know. And you're in Tennessee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I keep meaning to say this, but I guess you're going to hear about it now and whoever's listening, but I'm actually going to be in Tennessee in July.
Oh,
so
wow.
I really need to like set something up. Rachel, you want to come to Tennessee?
Yes.
That would be awesome.
I'll just take a really short trip.
I know, but Rachel and I, we're trying to, we're actually not like super far from each other. Like I feel like there's a good halfway point. So Rachel and I really need to meet up at some point.
Yeah.
And if anybody, if you or anybody else wants to take like a longer trip to like Lake Tahoe or somewhere, just like a little vacation, meet some writers.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
Yeah.
I just actually had a missions trip that was canceled. So now I have a voucher to take a plane trip somewhere.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, I need to like do like a writer's retreat or something, or like a meetup with Instagram friends or something like that. Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. I know I've asked people on Instagram to meet people from Instagram.
Organize meetups and stuff like that. So
yeah, I asked people where they were from because I thought whenever I go on vacation, I want to like check the list and see who's in that area. Like, okay, I know this person was there. I'm going to go visit them. Yeah.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, me too. I like to, when I'm going somewhere, I like to put in my stories, hey, I'm going to be in Austin for whatever. Is anybody in the area? and
yeah,
just, and sometimes you find people, but generally because I do it that way, it's like, it's too last minute for people. Mm-hmm. So people respond and they're like, oh yeah, I'm in the area, but I'm actually out of town. So I'm like, because I know that I'm going to be in Nashville like a month in advance, I'm like, I can do this. Like I can organize something. And especially because I know I tried to organize something before that didn't work out. So I already know who's like in the area, you know? So I think we had another question, and this was from Emily, and I'm really curious about this too. So she wanted to know like what your secret for being productive, because I know you write a lot, but I know you're, you know, you're up on social media and you've got things planned, and I know you work out.
Yeah.
How do you manage to do all that stuff?
So I will, I know one of the biggest things that I'm, that enables me to do a lot of the things that I do right now is that I am working full time as a writer. That is something that I'm very thankful that I have been able to do at this point in my life. It was just something that my husband and I just were like, you know what, this is what I've wanted to do for a really long time. Let's give it an honest go. So I am exclusively doing that. So that definitely helps a lot as far as like being productive with writing things. That is what I do for work. So obviously I have a little bit more time than somebody who works a full-time or even part-time job doing something else. So it definitely helps in that regard. However, I will say I was working a full-time job while I wrote Lake of Glass and up until shortly before its release. And so I know what it's like to be drafting and doing the writerly things and working full-time as well. And honestly, the biggest thing that I would say is most beneficial for me is kind of that concept of like putting in the big rocks first. In if you have a jar, you only can fit so much into it. And if you try to put the small things in first, like the sand, you're going to run out of room for the big rocks. So you got to put the big rocks in and then you can fill it in with the sand afterwards. And so for me, that's, I need time for writing. I need time to exercise and take care of my body. I need time to take care of my house. There's just certain things that you have to do. You know, you have to make food, you have to shower, you have to do certain things. And so for me, writing is one of those things. I've been trying to make reading one of those things as well, because that's not only something that is restorative to me, but it's also very important for maintaining creativity and growing in your craft and things like that. So, you know, it's kind of like finding out what are those key things that you have to do and remembering that a yes to one thing is a no to another thing. You are saying no to something else, no matter what. So it's kind of just that thing of like, okay, what do I really want to prioritize? What really matters to me? And then shaping the day around that. Obviously you can't go based off of just what you like to do all the time, because then you won't ever actually get anything done. I think that's something that I've kind of noticed for myself a lot recently is that thing of, we always like to say that we're mood readers or mood writers, but you really can't make decisions based on your mood, because if you do, then you're not going to get things done. So it's just that thing of truly taking care of yourself is sometimes doing the hard things that you don't want to do, and making sure that you are taking care of those tasks so that you then can do the things you want to do. So yeah, I think that's probably the best way I can explain how I kind of try to stay on top of all those things. I just kind of pick my top areas that I'm like, okay, these are the things that are non-negotiable for me, and that's what I focus on. And then from there, I sort of just say, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and I can't fit it in. Yeah. So I think that's, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I feel like I need to take some of your wisdom there for sure.
I know. I'm like, thank God this is recorded so I can remember all of this later, because that's really good advice.
Well,
I've never heard the jar analogy. Oh, really? I really like that. That's very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember where I heard that. It was a long time ago. I've heard a few different people say it, but it always is very like, they always say like, you know, if you have these different sized rocks, you've got your big rocks, which are like, you have to go to church, you have to spend time with God, you have to take care of yourself. Those are non-negotiables. But then there's like the middle size, which is like reading books just for fun, watching TV, going out and hanging out with friends, things like that. Those are middle-sized rocks. They're important. You don't want to forget them. But if you try to put the sand in first, which is all the like little tiny things that you're like, oh, I don't even know. I don't have good examples for them right now. But if you just put like the tiny little details in first, that's going to fill up the bottom. And then you're never going to have time for those bigger, more important things in your life. So you have to fill it up first with the bigger rocks and the medium rocks. So, yeah.
I also feel like those sand type tasks are really distracting. Like when you find one and then you think of another one, and then it's like this cycle where you get really distracted with all these little things that don't need done right now, but you're like just kind of stuck on them now.
And I will say something that I've discovered for myself to be very beneficial is figuring out systems that work for you. So I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the software called Notion, but it's an online like software program where you can basically just create any kind of system within it. It's just like a database program, basically. And that is what I use for essentially organizing my entire life. I keep all of my tasks in there, all of my writing projects in there. That's where I keep all the information, all the notes for my stories and everything like that. I keep it all in there. And having that one place to go, which obviously I have it organized to the point now where it makes a lot of sense, and it's much more, it's not just like I'm dropping it in and then leaving it. I do have that drop location, and then I can organize it. And having that place where you can just really quickly type in a little note of, hey, I need to water the plants. I forgot to do that this week, so I need to do that. And you can just drop it right there. Having that one-stop shop is really beneficial for me of like remembering things like that, those tiny little tasks that you're just sitting trying to get into writing. You're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to go do this random task. I forgot to go do the dishes or whatever. You can write that down and then you can come back to it later. And I find that tends to be a very helpful thing for me. It's also really helpful for when you have like a random story idea come to you, you can just type it out real fast and then you can just leave it alone.
I've heard of Notion, but I've never used it.
I was going to say, I kind of do the same thing on my phone. I have, you know, my calendar app. Mm-hmm. And I just put in like tasks for the day or like events or whatever it is. And so like in the morning, it's like first thing I'm like, okay, writing down everything I need to do in approximate times that I think I'm going to do it. And then sometimes I won't do any of it. And then I'll go back in at the end of the day and I'll put in the actual stuff that I actually did just so I can cross it off, you know, because sometimes you feel like you didn't do anything, but when you put it in later, you see that you did do something. And sometimes I will have ended up doing like the sand tasks, but I put them in. I'm like, well, I did something.
I think looking back at what you actually did is very beneficial too, because a lot of times it feels like we're not doing anything because we only did one or two tasks, but like those are really time consuming tasks a lot of times. And so they're very energy draining tasks. And then when you look back, you're like, oh, wow, I actually did some really good stuff today or this week or whenever.
I think I need to try doing the whole online system thing, because I tend to be very stubbornly old school. And so I'm like, I have all the notebooks, all the sticky notes, all the note cards, which is great. But then as far as like keeping track of tasks and to-do lists and plans. It doesn't always work out very well to have four different notebooks of things. And then I'm like, I can't remember what I wrote down, or I forgot to cross that off or whatever. And it just gets really messy.
I still use notebooks a ton too. Like I've been bullet journaling for like, I think I've been doing it since 2014, 14 now. So I've been doing bullet journaling for quite some time, and I don't do it in the same fashion. I still have a college ruled notebook now that I just do a quick little, like, every single day I write down what the day is, what are my goals for today, what are the tasks that I want to do. I still do that because I do find that having something physical where I can actually mark it off, it is very helpful, but I like to have the online system as well so that it's like I can kind of have running to-dos on there.
Because not every task falls in the list of what's going to get done today. It's just it needs to be remembered to get done.
So I find that that's really beneficial for me, is having those two options. Because I too am like, I want to have the physical. I don't like everything being on the computer. But it's also, there's certain things that you just can't keep track of as well.
And this is like perfect timing for this conversation because quarter three just started. So it's like, for anybody who wants to revise their quarterly goals and stuff, now is the perfect time.
It is.
I was just like, quarter three, what? I don't even think like
that. That is how I plan. I plan my life quarterly. I tend to do all of my goals and things. I think that's another way that I tend to be a little bit more productive, is I base my goal planning quarterly so that I'm not, a lot of times when we just are like, oh, this is the goals that I have for this entire year, we can either be really short-sighted or we can be really like large-sighted and be like, oh, I can get all of this done this year. And we've really overwhelmed ourselves with all these different tasks that we think we can do. Or like I said, on the flip side, you can just do, you can say, oh, I want to focus on this one thing. And then you find out that you're done with it in a month or something like that. If you're, you know, just depending on what the project is for you. And so I like to go on a quarterly basis. So it's just 3 months at a time. And that's kind of how I plan for my different projects. And I just kind of say, okay, what can I actually get done in 3 months time? Nothing else matters. I'm focusing on those tasks. And I kind of do it based on individual books. That tends to be how I do it with my like writing planning is, so for this quarter, I'm focusing on the second book in my Archives of the Warden series. I'm getting that ready for publishing this fall. So I have, that's my primary goal for this next quarter, is just like nitty gritty tasks, the really annoying, like right before publication tasks that just, they take up more time than you want them to. So it's all those little decision-making things. That's my primary goal for this quarter. But then I also have, like, I'm revising book two of Warriors and Mages, and then I'm drafting this other book in Archives of the Warden at the same time. So I have those things, those goals written out for this quarter of, here's how I'm going to accomplish those things. But it's just for this quarter. I'm not worrying about after September. It's just July, August, September. What can I get done right now?
It's like that old saying, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Exactly.
It breaks it apart, so it's easier to get it done.
Exactly. I think breaking things down is hugely helpful for productivity. It's like, even just like to the tiniest detail, it really can make things feel a lot less overwhelming. And that's honestly, I think the key with a lot of productivity is just not finding things to be like, making things less overwhelming for you.
No, I definitely agree with that, because I was having problems like finishing drafts, and I recently realized it's because the last time I finished a draft, it took me 6 months to do so. And it was back in 2020. So it was that long ago that I actually finished a draft. And I wrote every day and I just finished it. And I was working full time at the same time, but I didn't like set out plans far in advance, because after that, then I got so entrenched in like kind of like the writer world that whenever I was starting a draft, I was already thinking about when I was going to revise it, when it was going to go to beta readers, when it was going to get published. And those things are important. And some people are good at doing that, but for me, it would overwhelm me when I was just writing the draft. So I thought, okay, you're writing 500 words a day. And you're going to take 6 months to finish a draft, and you're just going to do it. And right now I've actually been writing about 1,000 a day, so it's probably going to be done by September.
Awesome.
But, you know, I'm just like, that's all, you know, if it's not done by September, that's fine. I'm just like, you're just going to keep plugging along until just the draft is finished. Yeah. And then you go from there. Like, I'm just not thinking about that because I know once I start thinking, okay, well, I want to have revisions here and beta readers here and this here, like, it just like grinds me to a halt. Mm-hmm. Yes. And for other people, it motivates them. For me, it does not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think that the biggest thing with, honestly, with drafting in general for me is just keep going. Don't stop for any reason. Like, just keep doing it. And I, like, even people, I've had people ask me, like, you know, they were thinking about changing POV or whatever in their story. And I'm like, just keep going. Don't go back and fix what you already did. Just keep going. Even if it's something where you have to completely rewrite the book, it's way easier to rewrite something than to write it for the first time. Like, just get it out there. You'll know then what you're actually trying to say by the end of the story. And then you can actually, you can kind of have this like informed way. Like, I think that's the thing is, like, when you write your first draft, you're really just informing yourself what you're even trying to write here. Yeah. And then you can go back and fix it.
Yeah. 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 It's like when, if you're in the middle of drafting and you decide, well, I'm not sure about this plot idea, or I'm not sure about this character or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like you can kind of get in the cycle of going back and fixing it. And then you write a little, and then you go back and fix something else. And then it's like, you keep trying to improve the first half of the book. So you never write the second half. And it's like, it's easier, like you said, when you already know what the story's really going to be to then go through and see what needs fixed versus trying to fix it before it's done.
Yes.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of like dealing with the consequences of that right now with revising this book, because originally in Fire and Night and then in the second book in the series, I had a character that I had included in the story. And when I was about 8 to 10 chapters of the way into the second book of drafting it for the first time, I realized that he was a really extraneous character. And I was like, he's doing nothing. He's just kind of there, and he's not really serving any purpose in the plot right now. So why am I keeping him around? It's just, it's hard to keep track of him even because I have a decently sized cast where there's like, I think there's 7 of them. So there's 7 pretty main characters that are like always around by the time the second book comes around, and they're like, they're always there. And so with him, it was 8 people that I had to keep track of. And that's a lot of people. And when I realized he's not actually doing anything, he's kind of just there, I was like, I really need to remove him. And so instead of like going back and actually doing the work of removing him right away, I just kept going as though he never existed. And so when I went back and I had to revise Fire and Night, I had to completely remove him from the entire draft. And so now I'm having to do that with the beginning of the second book as well, as he's back. And I'm like, oh, you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
So it can be difficult when you go back to rewrite. Yeah. You definitely have to make some changes. Oh, yeah. But I know if I had have had to go back to the beginning and start completely over to fix the fact that I didn't want him in the story anymore, I would have slowed myself down so much. I would have felt so discouraged, and I never would have finished the second book. And I would have just been like, I don't have time for this. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not excited about this, because you're always going to find something that needs to be fixed in a first draft. I think that's one of my biggest things is like those little decisions. You can just say, okay, well, I made that decision. Now I'm going to pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
Beauty of a first draft.
Yeah, because you lose steam. Like, once you like have like the momentum of working on the draft, you have to go back and fix things.
Yeah.
Especially like you said, you don't have the draft finished. So you don't even have that to like say to yourself, like, oh, okay, at least the draft is done. You're like,
yeah,
A, I have to fix this, and B, I have to finish it.
Yeah.
So then it just feels even more overwhelming. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a huge, like, it can be so, writing can be very discouraging if you're like, if you're going into the first draft that this has to be perfect when it's done, it's just going to take you forever. Because I mean, even with a first revision, I feel like it's not ever exactly where I want it to be after a first revision. I feel like I still need a lot of like further edits after that. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm just like, let me just get the story out and I'll figure it out as I go. once I get it done, once I get it on paper, then I can continually adjust to make it exactly what it needs to be.
I think we only had one last question, at least from the people who submitted the questions on Instagram. Rachel and I might have more questions, but our last one is from Millie. And this is kind of a fun question. She says, if you could have your favorite book recorded by any actor, alive or dead, who would it be?
I have a really hard time with this one. Okay. I think I'm going to be really cliche about this. It would be Pride and Prejudice. And I think, no, it can't be a guy reading it because it's from a girl's POV. So that doesn't make sense. Oh man, I don't even know.
But it's not in first person. So it could be a guy reading it. It could be.
I'll just go with Tom Hiddleston because if he reads anything, it sounds great.
Yes. He could read the grocery list and I'd listen.
Listen, yeah, I mean, seriously, his voice is excellent. I feel like it's made for audiobooks. And I'm just like, read all the classics. I'll listen to them. Every single one.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
So is Pride and Prejudice.
That's a good one. I wouldn't have thought of him, but
yeah, I think I would say Pride and Prejudice because that is probably my favorite book. Mm-hmm. And to have him read it would be very interesting. Mm-hmm. That would be, I would love to listen to any audiobook that he read, but Pride and Prejudice is my favorite. So I that is the question. What's my favorite book? So, I mean, I think that's what I would have to go with. Yeah.
Now I kind of want a new version of Pride and Prejudice with Tom Hiddleston playing Mr. Darcy.
I mean, I'm there. Let's go.
I would watch that.
100%. That would be great. Yeah.
I feel like that would actually be really good. I think he would be a great Mr. Darcy.
I feel like he would be. Yeah. I feel like he'd do a good job.
Because I feel like he's good at playing, like, divisive characters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and Mr. Darcy is, like, one of those people, like, you love him or you hate him. And a lot of people, you know, because he's just, like, he's awkward. Like, he doesn't really know what to say.
Yeah.
Then people think he's snobby, you know? Yeah.
He's just socially awkward, and I'm just like, hi, hello.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel.
That's why I'm never sure if I'm a Darcy or an Elizabeth, because I'm very stubborn and opinionated, but I'm also very awkward and uncomfortable. Yeah. So I'm a little of both.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing about it, is, like, they are so similar. They're honestly just, like, the two sides of the coin. Is because they have all those personality traits that are involved, like, they're basically the same person. She's just more outspoken and he's just more standoffish. But I think that's the thing about him, is he's only that way when he doesn't know people. But when he's close to his friends and things, like, when he's close to people, he tells them what he thinks. And, like, he is open with them. And you don't get to see that too much because he doesn't become that way with the audience until the end of the book.
Yeah.
But I do think that's something that's what makes Darcy so relatable for me, is it is that thing of, like, he's super socially awkward, but that's really his only issue, is he's just really awkward and he doesn't know what to do. But then when you get to know him, he's actually a very wonderful person and he actually does have a very big personality.
Because my fiance is like this, he's truthful to a fault. Like, he says what he thinks and doesn't necessarily really think about, like, it's like it offends someone, which, like, I'm always like, oh, well, I can't say this because somebody's feelings might be hurt. But there is value to telling the truth, because sometimes the truth may not be, like, what you want to hear, like, in the moment, but like in the long run, you got to hear those harsh truths. You know what I mean? Like nothing can improve and nothing can get better unless people say things that are true and maybe not pleasant to hear. And I think Darcy has that character trait, which is really admirable and it's a good trait to have, but it can also make it difficult for people to like you sometimes with that trait, you know?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Victoria. We got into everything. I mean, we ended with Pride and Prejudice here, and we really got into the nitty gritty of writing and just staying on top of everything. And it's just been so fun to have you. And
thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm so glad that you guys invited me to chat with you. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I'm sure you probably don't think of yourself as having like a lot of advice to offer. You're probably like, oh, this is just, you know, things that I do or whatever. You don't think a lot of it, but I feel like I got a lot of really helpful information through this conversation. So like, I just think you should know you're very like not only talented, but it is a talent also to be so motivated and so passionate and so like, I don't know, like on top of things. I know you're not a perfect person, but still, like, I very much admire you. And I just like, I learned a lot in this conversation. So I just thought you should know that.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad that one of the things I always want people to know, like, I want to help in whatever way I can. I feel like I can, it's almost like Darcy. I feel like I can come across as kind of like standoffish and things. And it's mostly because I always am like, I don't want to insert myself into people's lives unless they want me there. And so it's like, I tend to kind of be a little bit more cautious in those areas, but I want to help. I love feeling useful and like I can be of help to someone. So I'm really glad that, I don't know, anything that I can share can be helpful. So,
Well, I feel like you do a really good job of just leading by example because, you know, you're not... your social media presence is not like very like self-help, like tips all the time, but you're very like honest and open about like the way you get things done and like your goals and how you plan. And you're not telling anybody like, oh, this is the way you should do it. You just say, this is what I've discovered that works for me. And this is how I do it. And I feel like that's just really inspiring just to see how you do it, you know, and like have you leading by example.
Thank you very much. I'm glad. Again, I'm always thrilled to hear that it's helpful in any way to anyone. So, thank you so much.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you again. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July.
Do.
We'll have to have you on again sometime too.
That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Happy 4th.
Thank you.
Happy 4th. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it and tune in next week for another episode. And if you enjoyed it, please consider leaving a review so that other people can find us. And we will see you in the future. Bye.